Roz Chass has loved to draw cartoons since she was a child growing up in Brooklyn. She began selling cartoons to the New Yorker magazine as soon as she first submitted them in 1978. Her cartoons have been published in many other magazines, and she's illustrated several books and won many awards for her work. In her first memoir, Can't We Talk About Something More Pleasant?, Chass brought her signature wit to the topic of aging parents. The memoir and her other work is currently featured in an exhibition at the Norman Rockwell Museum in Stockbridge, Massachusetts. It is entitled Roz Chast, Cartoon Memoirs. I went to the museum recently to hang out with Roz Chast and talk about her work and the exhibition.
Roz Chast, a great pleasure to have you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
What has it been like putting this exhibit together?
It's been very interesting just to see all the different pieces from different projects that I've done. They've done an amazing job hanging them up. I had no idea how they were going to mount the pages from the parents' memoir I did. I had no idea how that would work, and I think they did a fantastic job. They look great.
Were you instrumental in saying, oh, okay, this is what I would like included, I would not like that included, of the actual choosing?
We worked together. I worked with Stephanie Plunkett from the Norman Rockwell Museum, and we worked together in choosing the pieces.
And when you look at your work like that, is that a surreal experience?
Surreal. No. No. I mean, I had never seen every, you know, especially certain books like the Phobias book. Maybe because that was fewer pages, I really could see them all at once. The parent book is too long. It's, I think, 230 pages, and I don't know how many, like a half or maybe two-thirds amount. You can't take them all in at once. But the Phobias book, it's 26 pages, and to see them all together was very interesting, to see them as a whole. But not surreal.
Not surreal. Well, that's good. I often ask that question. People do say, especially poets often use that term when they say that they are collecting their work and they're literally sitting down on the ground with all of the stuff and picking out the pieces that they're going to put into a collection and looking back and remembering some of it and not all of it.
There's a certain aspect of that which is just part of my week-to-week kind of work anyway. I mean, when I submit a group of drawings to the New Yorker every week, I don't just do one drawing and submit one piece. I have a lot of different drawings, and then I sort of choose, you know, six or seven or eight, generally, drawings out of everything that I've done or things that I've done from the past that I might want to redraw. So there's always part of my regular work week is looking at stuff I've done and selecting.
And with that said, out of that group of drawings, you never know which one will, or if any, will get accepted.
That's absolutely right. You just have no idea.
I assume, even if you think, oh, okay, this is the one, and it's not, what does that tell you as an artist, or does it just has no effect?
I think it tells me that my life has been a waste. And, you know, I've definitely, you know, they hate me. I've gone into the wrong profession. I should never have been born. My parents should never have been born. You know, stuff like that.
Just the normal.
Yeah, the usual everyday sort of thoughts, yes.
The anxiety stuff. What's the longest you've gone without selling something?
Several weeks.
Does it gnaw at you right away or does that take a while?
The first week is like, oh, that's fine. You know, that's fine. That's normal. Why would I sell every week? You know, am I the princess of the world? 2 weeks is like, okay, you know, they have the right. That's, you know, what I've signed up for. 3 weeks starts to be bad. And after that, it's like it starts to snowball into total despair.
But isn't the act of, given the success of this most recent book, They need you too, right? I mean, people expect, readers of the New Yorker expect often and want a cartoon from Roz Chast if they're a subscriber or a reader of the New Yorker.
I'm not so sure it works like that. I mean, I think that, you know, basically at any minute, anybody can get sick of anybody. So, you know, people expect, but then they tire. And that's just the way it is, you know, so.
That hasn't happened here yet, has it?
No. I hope not. I mean, it hasn't happened on my side, but, you know, I don't live in your head, so.
No, certainly hasn't happened on mine. When the book, the memoir, Can't We Talk About Something More Pleasant, came out, did you have any idea that it would resonate as much as it did?
No, I really didn't.
Do you have any sense as to why that is?
Well, I think that there's a certain probably demographic that it particularly might be pertinent to, like baby boomers who are maybe taking care of aging parents. But aside from that, it's something that everybody is going to have to face eventually. I mean, the big D. And once your parents are gone, your kids are going to be dealing with you, you know, so you're at one moment, you're the person taking care of your parents. And then, you know, a few years later, maybe it's your kids, hopefully, you know, taking care of you in some way. And it's not like a rare thing.
Was it a difficult book to do in the sense of because it was personal?
It was definitely different, more personal than anything that I've done. I mean, I think that my cartoons have always, to some extent, reflected aspects of my life. You know, when I was living in an apartment, I did a lot of cartoons about living in an apartment. You know, when I first moved out to the suburbs, I did cartoons about suburbia. But this was definitely very personal and autobiographical, really. You know, these were not stand-ins for people's parents. These were my parents. Difficult? For me, the greatest difficulty was figuring out how I wanted to put it together, how to make it coherent, and how to tell it, really.
How long had your parents been gone before you took it on?
Let's see. My dad died in 2007. My mother died in 2009. The book came out in 2014. And I think I sort of started toying around with it shortly after, but it took a long time. It took 2 or 3 years for it to kind of get to a point where I started to feel like, actually, this is a book.
Because when I lost my parents, I thought, you know, I still have boxes in my basement, and it's been 7 years, and I say, oh, well, someday I'll be able to look through those, and I start to look through those, and I say, all right, not today, and I move on. Yeah. So to be in that, there has to be some acceptance of the grief to be able to work with it artistically, I would think.
I guess. I don't know.
I guess there's two ways of asking the question. One would be what I just asked, and the other one is, does working on a project like that help you in the grieving process?
I never really thought about it like that. I mean, maybe because their deaths were so old. You know, I mean, my father was 95, my mother was 97. I might have had a very different experience if they had died in their 70s or something. Mm-hmm. No, I definitely didn't think of it as like catharsis about grief. I think for me, it was a way of remembering them and this fear of forgetting, you know, what they were like, how it all happened. And that's what was important to me.
And I think that fear of forgetting is universal, which may go back to the earlier question as to why it resonates with people.
Well, for me, writing and drawing is very connected with my fear of forgetting. I don't think I have a particularly wonderful memory. When I put it down, when I make it into a story, when I get it on paper, some of that anxiety of forgetting is lessened.
The title of the exhibit is Cartoon Memoirs. And back to what you were saying earlier, so in some way, all of those cartoons have a memoir sense.
Yeah, definitely. Not all of them. And, you know, so I mean, it's cartoons are just all over the place. I mean, some of them are more memoirish or like a story. Some of them are just cartoons, you know, silly, funny cartoons. But a lot of times I do like to write down events or stories or things I don't want to forget, you know. And this particular book, this memoir about my parents, I did not want to forget it. I didn't want to forget them. And I think I was very afraid that if I didn't do it, I would forget.
When you see your work in the galleries here at the museum and then glance to the right and see a Norman Rockwell and then glance back, what is that experience like?
Oh, yikes. It's kind of funny. I mean, we're very, I think we're pretty different in some ways. But I think in another way, I think both of us are very involved with people and how people act, like how they... their facial expressions, how they interact with each other. I think there's some kind of kinship there. You know, always the people are the most important thing. But, you know, I think this might be the understatement of the year to say that he had far more, you know, drawing skills than I do.
But it seems like the perfect place for the exhibit to be.
Oh, I'm thrilled to be here. Very, very excited because I love his work. It's very literary. You know, his pictures tell stories. And they're about people. And I love that. And they're funny. They're very funny. They're very sly. They're very funny. And they're great.
How long does it take you, and I'm sure this is difficult to put into words, but that moment when you know a cartoon is funny, of that one thing that it takes to make it work?
It really varies. It really varies a lot. There's occasionally a cartoon that I've done where I've gotten the idea and I've drawn it up and everything's hunky-dory, you know, within the first hour. But more likely... there's a lot of playing around and sometimes doing it for a while and then setting it aside and then coming back to it and setting it aside and tearing it up and starting it again and, you know, more of that. So it really varies.
The exhibition Roz Chass Cartoon Memoirs is at the Norman Rockwell Museum in Stockbridge, Massachusetts through October 26th. While at the museum with Chass, I had the opportunity to walk around the show with her.
We have an image here of the Birth of Venus. It was a cover illustration for the New Yorker from August of last year. Tell us a little bit about the illustration itself.
Well, it's a little bit based on, of course, the Botticelli Birth of Venus, and I love certain motifs in art history that you know, can be appropriated for cartoons. This is one of them, and you know, of course, the scream, the Hmong thing. They've almost become part of, you know, the popular culture, like a kind of trope, you know. Venus in a lot of selfies, all of that.
A lot of people taking pictures of the art.
Of the art, yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Which we see more and more of.
Oh, I know. It's really incredible in museums, people taking pictures of the art museum. I've done it myself until I come home and I see I'm deleting them all from my phone because it's so stupid. They are the horrible pictures of art, but you want to remember it, so that's why you do it, but it's not worth it.
When you do a cover like this, I assume when you did this, you knew it was going to be a cover.
Well, when I did the first sketch, I didn't. It was just an idea I had, so I submitted it as a black and white sketch, and then when they told me they were going to buy it, then I went to finish and did it in color.
Are there specifications that you have to have to say this is going to be a cover, so it has to have these ingredients?
It's a certain size, and also you don't want to have any important elements under where the, you know, name of the magazine or the masthead, I guess that's what it's called, the name of the magazine is going to go, obviously. But I like, you know, the strap on the side. You can play around with it a little bit. I've done different covers that have different, you know, sort of funny things in the strap, whatever. You can, you know, play with the elements a little bit.
And enjoy to make that article of the magazine fun to look at.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. They've even occasionally let me draw the logo, the name of the masthead, which I like doing. It's fun.
The last time we spoke about the book at length, I told you that one of my favorite parts of it is the pictures of the items that you found from your mother's closet. Here at the Rockwell, you have brought some of those objects from the crazy closet.
Yeah, well, this was partly Stephanie's idea, and I see it, and it really... It cracks me up. I mean, you know, I don't know what my mother would have thought. But, you know, this book, The Reader's Encyclopedia, was my father's book. And I saved that because it was so, you can see if you look at it, It's just all full of his notes, you know, because he loved words so much. Books that he was always just, he'd read an article that had something to do with something in a book. And so every book just had newspaper articles or like his own notes on what he had read. And, you know, it was just this almost like a folder, a book with books within books within books. And of course, the Merck Manual was my mother's, which is all annotated with different like medical things. And yeah, it's kind of funny to see these things here, absolutely.
The Merck Manual has notes from, I assume, her doctor with instructions like no heavy lifting.
Yeah, no heavy lifting. And, you know, sometimes she'd make her own notes in the margins or whatever.
In the back, is that her bag?
Yes, that was her bag. And it was so strange because it was very, very unlike my mother to carry a handbag like that. That's an evening bag. My parents did not go out in the evening, at least in my day. You know, when I knew them, they didn't. Of course, I was born so late in their lives that they may have had a nightlife of sorts before I was born. I don't know. But I found that at the top of the closet wrapped in tissue paper. And I just wanted to take it. You know, I didn't want to have it thrown out with the other stuff. I don't know. It's sort of a mystery object in a way.
It's almost, for our listeners, it's almost shaped like a binocular case, but very jeweled black, jeweled on the bottom with a maroon scallop tortoiseshell on the top.
Yeah, like a Bakelite kind of top. And you can tell that there's a crack in it, which maybe that's why she didn't use it. She had fixed it with some sort of glue, and, you know, that crack is a little, you know, your eye goes to it, or my eye goes to it. Maybe that's why she didn't want to use it. But then they didn't go out at night where she would use a bag like that. She just had her grandma bag all the time. She had a big purse with all the, she would carry around her passport, you know. I mean, she carried everything in that bag, so an evening bag would not have done.
There were so many drawings from just about half of the book, I guess, of Can't We Talk About Something More Pleasant? I do want to go over toward the end, and we see the chapter entitled The End, and you can see your work of where things have been pasted in, and so the viewer certainly gets an idea of the process of how you can put something together.
Oh, yeah. I mean, one of the things about when, you know, you do something for camera is that you don't see all of these, you know, pasted together, collaged together pages. But in the process of editing the book, very often I would like the page, but then I'd say, oh, I hate that stuff that's at the top of the page. I'm going to totally, you know, write something else, and I'd paste it on. Or, you know, sometimes there's like a page with something pasted on and something pasted on top of that. So it could be like three or four layers deep of like pasted on stuff. But when you, you know, when it's published, you don't see any of this.
The actual photos of your parents, are these copies, I assume?
Weirdly, you know, I was thinking about that the other day because they're in a moleskin notebook that I have in a drawer at home. So these are very good photocopies of the moleskin notebook I have at home, the ones of my mother at the end.
And those were done while she was there,
yes,
with you?
Oh, right, when I would go to the assisted living place at the end of her life, and I would draw her.
And we were talking about the grieving and the process, but did that just seem natural to you to draw them as they were?
Yes.
And then actually, you were there when she...
I wasn't there when she died. Her aide called, because at that point, for the last year of her life, she was in assisted living, but she also had a live-in aide 24 hours, and the aide called me and said that she was passing, and I was 10 minutes away. I got in my car and drove there, but she had just died.
When you look at this, and I mentioned this when we were talking about how busy the walls are, but I do want to look at this one. Well, actually, it's right here. We can I was going to look at that, but it's actually right here. The Wheel of Doom, and this is a good example of your work where there is so much to look at.
Yeah, well, it's. I guess I like detail a lot. I mean, one of my favorite Walt Disney quotes is he said that with the cartoons that he did, one of the ways that it drew people in, that they simulated reality, was that there's always more to look at than you can take in. They weren't just like a schematic of a person in a room. It's like, I want people to feel, when they're looking at somebody in a room, I want them to feel they can open up the drawer in the coffee table, they'll know what's in the drawer. you know, I want it to feel real. So I like detail.
How long does it take? Because looking at this, and we'll have these images on the website, but for someone to look, because there is the actual wheel, and then there are various things on the inside. So for you to think of that, how many versions does this go through?
Probably a lot, but it's what I do. So, you know, I mean, I can't do anything else. So, you know.
So that's convenient.
What else am I going to do, right?
The exhibition Roz Chass Cartoon Memoirs is at the Norman Rockwell Museum in Stockbridge, Massachusetts through October 26th. Before leaving the museum, I wanted to check in with Stephanie Plunka, the Deputy Director and Chief Curator at the Norman Rockwell Museum, about her work on the Roz Chass exhibit.
Stephanie Plunka, always a great pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
We talked with Roz about what it has been like to put this together. For you, what has the experience been like?
It's really been extraordinary. I mean, Roz has been a part of my household for quite a few years now. I love her work. My family and I laugh about it every week in The New Yorker or anywhere we can find it. So you can imagine just having the opportunity to meet her, to talk to her, and then to think about how best to represent her incredible body of work created over 40 years was quite an experience.
Who had the idea that this would be a good fit for the Rockwell Museum?
Well, you know, it was me, because I love her work so much. And immediately our director, Lori Norton Moffat, agreed. She, in many ways, of course, is extremely different from Norman Rockwell. But as she mentioned, they are both interested in people. In the psyches behind people's behaviors, in the idiosyncrasies, you know, life's small moments. I think that aspect of visual storytelling that focuses on humanity is something that really does tie them. And in some ways, Roz, I think, is a storyteller for the 21st century, with the pace of life in our times, the anxieties that we feel, the worries, the things that we don't say that are in our heads that her cartoons give us the opportunity to laugh about. These are all really special qualities, and it just seemed like the perfect fit.
I love how the exhibit is laid out, because often in her work it is so busy. There is so much going on in a single panel. And instead of giving us a lot of wall space, you made the walls themselves very busy.
You know, I think we wanted to give the sense of the volume of work that she has produced, but also the intensity of it, because sometimes even one cartoon can, as you say, have that sense of many people's voices, many people's thoughts. So it really gives people a lot to look at, but hopefully breaks it into categories that will give a little bit more insight into each of the many areas that she's really explored. Everything from single panel cartoons to multi-panel cartoons, children's books, illustrated books for adults. You know, she really has run the gamut of all the kinds of work that reaches a popular audience, a very broad audience. So there's something for everybody.
Much of the work, of course, a part of The New Yorker, and this museum has had a long affiliation with The New Yorker in showing the work of The New Yorker and New Yorker artists.
Yes, in fact, the Norman Rockwell Museum organized The New Yorker's 80th anniversary show. It was very exciting. We had the work of, I think, about 65 artists and covers that actually went back through The New Yorker's history. And we love The New Yorker because The New Yorker is the only mass publication that has had an illustrated cover since its inception in 1925. So that's pretty special in this day and age. Most of the magazines that embraced illustration are either gone or have gone completely to photography. So that's a pretty unique aspect of The New Yorker in general.
For people who come out to see the Roz Chass exhibit, what else is there to see in the museum this summer?
We have some great icons of the art of Norman Rockwell that have come back to us from national tour, and they are on view this summer. So we hope people come out. We have a special section that addresses humor in Rockwell's art, that addresses childhood, Also a great gallery on Norman Rockwell's process, which was very extensive. So we hope people will come and enjoy those works as well.
Stephanie Plunkett, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Joe. So great to be with you.
The exhibition Roz Chass Cartoon Memoirs is at the Norman Rockwell Museum in Stockbridge, Massachusetts through October 26th. For more information, you can visit nrm.org, nrm.org. We have pictures, very cool pictures, posted along with the audio of this segment at wamc.org/roundtable. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.